Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share positive information. We are non-political, and the information I share on health and nutrition all comes from the National Library of Medicine, published in peer-reviewed journals, done at respected institutions. Now, why do I say that? For a simple reason. My regular audience knows all this, but we have a lot of new people viewing this. And also up on Gary Nall YouTube, on Odyssey. And so as a result, they're saying, well, who is this guy? How do I know I can trust this information? And this comes from a long time ago. And I'm going to get into our health in just a moment. I just want to do this as a preamble. In one of my very first debates, it was back in the early 1970s, 71, the issue was not the information. Were pesticides harmful, DDT specifically? I was one of the people, we had a small number of people out there trying to get DDT out, and DDT was a major pesticide. In fact, as a child, I can remember on two instances where trucks went up and down the street spraying this DDT, and it came out like a fog, and everyone was covered in it, your houses. Nobody thought anything of it. It was supposed to protect us. And then at the swimming pool, a guy would come with something that looked like a leaf blower and covered all of us in the pool with DDT. Well, there was one person who said this was wrong and dangerous. She was right. The entire scientific establishment that said DDT was safe, including the FDA, they were wrong. Her name was Rachel Carson. Now, I never met Rachel Carson, but she was a marine biologist, and she found that it was extremely dangerous, and it would last a long time in the soil, and it could cause cancer, and it would adversely affect our DNA. So I began to do as much research as I could, and I began to use my radio form to get volunteers, and we would go to different places and hand out literature on get the government to say no to DDT. We went down to Washington, D.C. In fact, at one point, and that's with, there was no problem with security back then, so we would hand every single legislator a little pack that I'd written up using her material, another material about let's ban DDT. There weren't many of us. We didn't have any marches. There weren't enough. Sometimes it'd be five or six of us. But over a period of time, the message got out. And over a period of time, Ralph Nader, who really is the single most important person in American history when it comes to creating legislation and never being elected to an office. So he was a non-legislator who had more positive influence on getting laws passed, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and all these other, the Seatbelt Act. And so he protected this. And so he got behind this. We banned DDT in 1972. But before it was banned, I was doing a lot of debates on radio and television, and I had no academic background. I graduated from business college, yes. I was a registered dietitian, yes, but I had no clinical nutrition. I was not a scientist. And so the issue was never, is the information right? It's who's presenting it. And always, I mean, in every single situation, well, here is doctor such and such, and this doctor is a medical, you're not a medical doctor, are you, Gary? No. Well, then let us listen to the doctor because they are more educated. Educated on what? They have no training, no classes in environmental toxicology. And so I wonder how many people didn't come down on the side of what we were saying because of our lack of credentials, my lack of credentials. I was the number one person for almost 20 years debating on all health issues. I did over 400 debates on network television, radio, news. So then I went back to get my background. And then one day, when I was just finishing a debate on Channel 5 with Bill Boggs, a well-known and highly respected broadcast journalist in New York, after the show, he said, Gary, you won the debate on information and facts. They won the debate on credentials. And in America, we seem to have this fetish about always respecting the most credentialed person. He said, So from now on, when you're making an argument, I suggest that you get the best literature you can and hand it to them and say, this comes from the National Library of Medicine. This is a peer-reviewed journal. So I have them to thank for that because that's what I did. In fact, in my very next debate, I took 5,000, I repeat, 5,000 scientific abstracts on the healing power of ginseng to a debate. And the doctor, good doctor, came out saying, well, there's no scientific evidence that ginseng's any good. And then it came to me and I said, well, sir, I'm merely the bearer of the information. Here are 5,000 peer-reviewed studies from around the world showing that ginseng does, and then I went through all this stuff. And then you could suddenly see he was stuck. He didn't have his facts. He was just this kind of arrogant, boisterous individual saying, I'm a doctor, I know best. Well, no, you don't. And so that's why every single, no exception, piece of information I share on my program comes from the National Library of Medicine peer-reviewed literature. I'll give you an example. The National Institutes of Cardiology, and this is for all of Mexico, found that the higher the magnesium, that's an important mineral, the healthier our arteries. So why is this important? Because we right now are a nation that is, unfortunately, sadly, is very sick. We have never been this sick. I'm not talking about COVID, though that's partly responsible. Before COVID, back in 2019, we were the most overweight nation in the world in adults and children per population. That's not something you want to be proud of. And so outside of athletes in school, high school, and college, most Americans stop exercising. They don't eat healthy diets. But then we started with the woke generation, and they said it's good to be fat, be happy, and be fat, be overweight. And nobody should shame them. I agree, nobody should ever shame someone because of something in the way of, well, what is actually a precursor to a major disease? And that is being overweight. Remember this, your heart does not grow in proportion to your weight, but it does have to pump blood, more blood through the arteries and veins. Now, if you're overweight, the probability is you've had a diet that is not a healthy diet. I've never seen anyone in my practice that became morbidly obese eating sprout salads. So as a result, we're eating refined carbohydrates, trans fats, saturated fats, all of these things that cause us to become overweight, but also they damage our arteries. Therefore, a person could lose weight and feel okay, and let's hope they do lose weight. But what about the damage that was done to their arteries and veins when they were overweight? If those are not fixed, then you're going to end up like a friend of mine, a friend for 26 years. He's a professional friend. He is very good in what he does, and I use his services on a regular basis, and you become friendly with people. And he was always smoking, and he always had a pot belly. And of course, I'm not going to mention anything about this because it's none of my business. I have no right to transgress that line. I believe in freedom of choice. I just hope you make the right choice. Well, clearly, he thought he was making the right choice until last week when he called me and said he needed some help. And I said, why? He said, well, he's just about to go into surgery. They're going to give him a triple bypass operation. That's all they can do at this moment. He needs more. And because his carotid artery, that's the artery that goes up to the brain, feeds the brain, that's almost 100% clogged. And that's meaning that he is very sick and could die. So he said, after I get out of the surgery, could you help me get my health back? And I said, of course I'll help you. And can we help people clear their arteries? Yes. What's the proof? Probably the finest, most courageous cardiologist in American history, Dr. Dean Ornish. Look him up. Here's what you'll see. He did the first studies, the first and second study, showing that with no medical intervention, just lifestyle and behavior modification, exercising, de-stressing, healthy plant-based diet, that you could reverse conditions that otherwise lead to putting in stents, coronary bypass operation, Even in a new film that I've done, it is shown that he took 9 individuals who required a complete heart transplant, taking the old heart out. There was no way of fixing it, putting a new heart in. And he was able to keep all 9 of those people from having to have that heart transplant. I filmed them. So that should have made headline news. He should have gotten the Nobel Prize in Medicine. But he did this also 40 years ago. He and I appeared on PBS National to debate the issue with other doctors who couldn't believe this. But it was true. He published in the 2 of the most respected journals in the world, The Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine. So you would have thought, okay, here's how we play it. If anywhere in science and medicine you can have a study that can be reproducible, meaning someone else, not you, take your protocol, follow it exactly, and come up with the same results you did, that's considered the finest type of medicine there is in science. Therefore, it becomes what is now used. So that meant that all of cardiology should have shifted to encouraging a plant-based diet, exercise, stress management, and then I would have suggested nutrient therapy, such as calcium and magnesium, and coenzyme Q10, cayenne, and L-carnitine, and other nutrients like potassium that are known to strengthen the heart, regulate its beat, and have it be stronger. Nothing was done. Zero. Crickets. As if it never happened. But it did. And he had a best-selling book. He traveled the country. I had him on my radio show many times. So the whole idea is if we do it better, something safer, something that actually reverses the underlying cause of a disease, that's what we're going to do. Absolutely, positively, 100% just the opposite. This concerns me, and it should concern you, that we have natural and non-toxic methods of preventing disease and helping people mitigate their disease, but we're not using them. Why? Well, you know why. I don't have to tell you. And I know why. And it's been shown by even Dr. Angell, the former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, who was there, I believe, for 20 years. She's now, I believe, a professor at Harvard. And she said it. All right? So let's do all we can to use the most natural way of approaching health. Let's go back to the National Institutes of Cardiology. They found magnesium was important. Yes. Magnesium regulates your heartbeat. Therefore, one of the best things you can do if you have stress. Why? Because stress changes the electrical charge to the heart. It has to, because if you go to run, your heart has to pick up its pace. If you're stressed or anxious or fearful, the heart picks up its pace. If you're creating cortisol, a stress hormone, the heart picks up its pace. But it has to come right back down to a normal pace. And if it doesn't, then you can have AFib. You can have an irregular heartbeat, and that can kill you. That can lead to strokes and a heart attack. But we also know that there are natural approaches to that as well. We're looking at alternatives that work and have proof. But what we don't ever talk about, ever, is, okay, you were overweight. You had damage. All right? You cannot be overweight and be healthy. It is not physically possible. So you lose the weight. Great. But did you repair the damage? No one told me. What do you mean repair the damage, Gary? I mean, did they tell you how to go in there and clean up the arteries? And over time, through diet, exercise, and supplementation, you get a healthy endothelium, the inner lining of the arteries. Let me put it really simple. Let's just say that you have a water hose. All right, it's pliable. You roll it up and use it. But you leave it out in the sun all summer, and you don't use it. Come the fall, you pick it up. It's all cracked. It's stiff. Same thing with your arteries. So you have to keep them healthy, pliable. You have to keep them so blood can flow through without being interfered with and creating a tightening of the arteries. That creates increased blood pressure. That can also lead to a heart attack and stroke. So I just give you this to understand that please go through this. Now I'm going to do a classroom on the air, which, by the way, every morning I do them in the morning. I film them. And then you can go to Gary Knoll YouTube and download them. You can go to Rumble and look under Gary Knoll Film Library, and you can go to Odyssey and you can watch them. I don't play my classroom on the air on my regular noon show. I do these, health nutrition, on my regular noon show. So it's just a lot of additional information. Again, it's never controversial. It's not political. It's stuff that really helps us with the issues of our life. So back to this study. So I've told you about why detoxify, because that's how you repair the damage from being overweight to every organ in the body, your kidneys, your heart, your lung, your brain, and of course, the endothelial tissue in the veins and arteries. So now we have this study. It's about magnesium. What's it show? Listen carefully. The higher the level of magnesium within your normal range, it can reduce the risk of hypertension by almost 50%. And the risk of coronary artery calcification, what I was just talking about, the stiffness, by 42%. More than 70% of our population have an unhealthy balance of calcium to magnesium in our million trillions of cells. A previous study in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition indicated that for every 50 milligrams per day increase in the intake of magnesium, the risk of cancer was reduced by 7%. Okay, 7% reduction in cancer risk with just 50 milligrams increase? Okay, the normal person gets somewhere around 300, maybe 400 milligrams magnesium each day in their diet. I believe it should be double that, 800. So if we go from 400 to 800, based upon 7% increasing with 50 milligrams, then I should be substantially reduced in my risk of cancer. Now, another notable study with more than 4,600 Americans found the risk of developing metabolic syndrome over the next 15 years was 31% lower for those with the highest intake of magnesium. And data from 1,276 Mexican subjects also indicated that for every, it's a little complicated, it's 0.17 milligrams per deciliter increase in serum magnesium levels was associated with a 16% reduction in coronary artery disease. The new cross-sectional study, which was published in the Nutrition Journal, major journal, assessed magnesium levels in about 1,300 Mexican participants, and none of the participants had any symptoms of cardiovascular disease. And the results indicated that people with the highest average serum level of magnesium had 48% lower odds of high blood pressure or hypertension, and 69% lower odds of type 2 diabetes, and 42% lower odds of coronary artery calcification compared with people with the lowest average. Okay? So this is really an important study. And this, if you applied this starting today, you could absolutely reduce your chance of heart attack, stroke, diabetes, and cancer. And also, you're enhancing the body's ability to reduce inflammation in the endothelial cells. Good. Now, from Tabritz University of Medical Science comes a study about what they call the black seed. Well, it's normally the black cumin seed, or cumin seed oil. And what they found, it's a very bitter tasting, but extraordinarily healing oil. It exceeds the capacity of any other oil that we know of, more than olive oil, more than flaxseed, hemp seed. It is the superstar. Black cumin seed oil, I always keep in my refrigerator. It lasts a long time, and you don't need much. So if I feel myself out of balance in some way, if I'm going on an airplane, where there's a lot of people, or I'm coming off an airplane, I always take 1 teaspoon of black cumin seed oil in about 16 ounces of a juice. I always take it, don't just take it straight down, it's a little too harsh. Take it in a smoothie, but it helps treat, in this study, hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's disease. That's according to a randomized clinical trial. And this is an ancient healing food. It's known as nigella, N-I-G-E-L-L-A, sativa, S-A-T-I-V-A. And it once was known as the remedy for everything but death. And indeed, it may prove the ideal treatment for the autoimmune thyroid condition known as Hashimoto's disease, which is the most common form of hypothyroidism. And this was published in the British Medical Journal Complementary and Alternative Medicine. So if you have an underactive thyroid, if you have hypothyroidism, which millions of Americans do, and especially women postmenopause, you might want to consider this. And also, aside from having these things, just even if you don't always use them, when you know you need them, you've got them there. That's important. And finally, twice a week, have a yoga class, plus do it at home, and it's effective in reducing depression. Boston University School of Medicine, people who suffer from depression should participate in yoga and deep breathing classes at least twice weekly, plus practice at home to receive a significant reduction in depression. And this was published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. We knew that meditation is great for you, for de-stressing you, for bringing your cortisol levels down, for allowing you to deal with stress without becoming stressed, and that's the art. You know, we had a school teacher, and everyone loved this school teacher. She was so patient with people. And she was in a class where we had some rowdy students. And I remember one of the other teachers, and I was there, and the class was over, and the other teacher says, "How can you not be stressed by all the stress that comes out of this class?" The teacher says, "I don't take it personally. They're creating the stress. I'm not absorbing it." That stuck in my mind. And that was a long time ago. That was in high school. So just remember, be the person who stays non-toxic in a toxic environment, happy in a sad environment, positive in a negative environment, optimistic in a fatalistic environment, because everything is perception. Let's face it, we cannot always change the circumstances in our life, can we? No. But we can change how we're going to be affected by the circumstances in our life. That we can do. I get acupuncture preventatively. You know, nothing's wrong with me. I'm in ideal health. I get my blood work up done, cardiovascular done, pulse done. And my doctor is a medical doctor from China. He was born in China, raised in China, became a medical doctor, then was a professor, then moved to the United States and went to the University of Pennsylvania, where he was for the last 30 years, and then kind of semi-retired down here. But everyone goes to him. He's a very gentle person, very smart, and he'll sit and take your pulse, but he's reading seven pulses, not just one. And he takes my pulse before and after, and my blood pressure before and after. He's, "Well, you know, your resting pulse is 50. You know, he says, "You know, there was a time when my pulse was not good, Gary." I said, "When was that?" He said, "When I was in the internment camps in China under Mao Zedong. My family was in there. We were in there for a long time. We were forced on re-education farms where you barely got anything to eat. And they worked you all day, 7 days a week. And for 7 years, we were in there." And he said, "My father saw how many of the people in there died and suffered. And he said, thank goodness my father was also a meditator. And he said, so our family would meditate in the most stressful times of the day." And it's that meditation of saying, even though I'm in a bad environment, I'm not going to feel bad. And so as a result, we survived. And he said, "Gary, I survived without anger." Because a lot of people come out of a place like that, and boy, they're bitter, they're anger. And then they start to be argumentative about everything because of what they suffered. Understandable so. He said, "We did it differently." So think about that. Think about someone who is deprived of their freedom only because someone decided to say, my neighbor reads books from, you know, Western authors instead of the books that you're telling us, Mao's Little Red Book. And yet today, he has used all those skills in helping other people. And by the way, acupuncture helps to de-stress, brings you to a sense of calm. It's one of the best things you can do for depression. Just suggesting. Chiropractic is also good to do preventatively, like once a month. And eating well is also prevention. Yeah. This is simple things, not complicated. I'll do one last one here. And that's from the University College London. They found that the social media and this self-perpetuating cycle of risk for your body image in eating disorders is getting worse, not better. With recent reports finding that 91% of the United States adolescents use social media and that over 50% check their accounts at least once per hour, researchers decide to have a look into the influence of so much social media use on body image concerns in eating pathology in young adults, like, you know, let's say anorexia, bulimia. And what they found at the Institute of Global Health, University College, after compiling all this information from 50 different studies in 17 countries, so it's not just isolated, it's all over the world, and people from 10 to 24 years of age, they centered around the comparisons of social media exposure to physical and mental health outcomes. And eating disorders can often be fatal. I know I've worked with people with anorexia. With such an overwhelming percentage of modern children using and interacting with social media, the risk could be generational and have consequences if ignored. So understanding factors contributing to pathology allows researchers and parents in particular, and educators, and policymakers and healthcare professionals to use resources proactively and preventatively. The report suggests that social media usage leads to body image concerns and eating disorders and disordered eating and poor mental health. And specific time and frequency exposure to social media, the more you watch it, the worse it gets. And just one of the latest ones, and I've mentioned this before, is two things. First, there's this idea that celebrating someone who's morbidly obese on social media, which they're doing, and then everyone says how great you are. And that is not what you should be saying to someone who's morbidly obese, because that person will die absolutely positively long before they should. And no matter what you say from out exteriorly, those may be momentarily feel-good moments, but someone who is eating themselves to death, or the consequence of eating and overeating and not exercising, will be death. But in the process, you're not going to go directly from overeating to death. You're going to go through high blood pressure, diabetes, depression, angst, and anxiety disorders, improper sleeping. You're going to go through irregular heartbeats and pain. You're going to go through diabetic pain, neuropathies. And you can also lose, through gangrene and poor circulation of the extremities, you can lose toes and feet, which diabetics do in huge amounts. So when you look at the truth of what's going on in a person's body, if you could open up the skin and if you could just see every single thing that's happening when a person is eating wrong, and the heart struggling to beat and having enormous pressure on it to get the blood, then you wouldn't be celebrating that person's obesity. You'd be there with empathy and positive suggestions, if they chose to use them, and a support system to help them gain their health back. In the process, help them lose the weight and regain their self-esteem, regain their sense of self-love. Because anyone who says, "We love you for being obese," there's a difference between loving them for being obese and loving them in spite of them being obese. And we seem to have forgotten that. Young people just don't seem to have the intellect to understand this. So don't celebrate someone's dying in front of you. And that's what we're doing. And unfortunately, look at the largest number of people. They're looking at the Kardashians and looking at her body and her $1 billion and her largest private jet out there at the airport, and thinking, wow, Look at her. Look at her body. No, look at my body. No, don't compare yourself. Get your body weight, get your body mass index down. Get your muscles strong. And you're not that other person, and they're not you, and you're not in their life. You don't know what they really go through. I've counseled over 3,000 very famous celebrities and the tens of thousands of people I've counseled. And guess what? The most famous people, models that you're all familiar with, people who won Academy Awards that you know by heart, people you think, and including athletes and famous singers, oh, do they have it all? They may have all that money can buy, but they don't have happiness, which you can't buy. So don't assume that that body they have and the style of their clothes and how they have their hair and makeup is something that you should emulate. It isn't. That's it for health and nutrition today. A little longer, but I think it's important that we learn more than just information. We learn the context and the human dynamic that it has to fit into. Remember, you can always go to GaryNall.com because all the articles I'm writing, I wrote 2 articles over the weekend. I post them on important topics. Newest documentaries are there. Back in a moment with some really interesting material. Welcome back. I'm Gary Nall. Just a few little notes that are important. This comes from the expose. Quote, U.S. doctors admit they killed tens of thousands of patients during the pandemic by putting them on ventilators. Quote, a jaw-dropping article published by the Wall Street Journal has resulted in it, the American physicians admitted to ventilating patients who did not need it as a step in their protocol. It was done not as a treatment that was likely to benefit the patient, but rather as a fruitless and callous way of attempting to stop the spread of COVID-19. Doctors are treating a new flood of critically ill coronavirus patients with treatments from before the pandemic to keep more patients alive and send them home sooner. And then it goes into all this. And I can remember at the time I said, why don't they use hyperbaric oxygen therapy instead? They should have. That's acknowledged now. Once again, the Orthodox establishment, all of them were wrong. And that's unfortunate. And they can say, well, lessons learned, but we didn't learn any lessons from Vietnam, from Afghanistan, from Iraq, from voting Republican or Democrat. We haven't learned any lessons about anything, it seems. Just want to share that with you, because I believe there should be a lot of wrongful death suits coming. And also, this is also from Wim Hartung, very respected person, from Tom's Dispatch. Quote, Congress has been captured by the arms industry, and we're paying the price, and what a price it is. And it goes on to talk about the new budget. It's going to be $842 billion. That's only the above-line budget. The below-line budget will be probably half that. So we're dealing with over $1.5 trillion, more or less, going for war and going for death and destruction. And yet in the United States, we raised 3,000 voices to meet in Washington, D.C. Great voices, Gerald Salante and Max Blumenthal, Aaron Mate, and others from all political persuasions. And yet in one day, just over the weekend, 3.5 million people in France went to the streets to protest a change in their pension plans, where they intend to raise the age before you can get a pension. 3.5 million in France, and all of 3,000 in the United States, in the entire country. What does that tell you? I'd like to hear your opinion. Why are Americans not being against the war? Or if they are, why are they not joining in to protest? But here's Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, Bernie Sanders included, hypocrite that he is, they're all giving to the war death machine without a single voice against it. Yeah, okay. If you want to be that voice, 888-874-4888. Oh, and by the way, not today, I don't have time, but tomorrow, I'm going to have a lawyer on who won a very important lawsuit against the governor to stop some of the vaccine mandates. Well, she won, and then the governor appealed. Now, the governor is putting into place laws you cannot imagine. What amounts to internment camps all over New York. I won't go into all of it, but I'll just say they can come to your apartment or house and arrest you, even if you're completely healthy. You will have no due process. You will not be allowed to be represented by a lawyer. Think that is not going to happen? Then you're more naive than you imagined, because it will happen. New York has become a police state, a fascistic state. And yet, as much as I tell people, be aware, protest, people are, well, let's turn the channel. Okay, then I've got a solution for everything. I'm going to share it later this week. It's a commentary on what should we do in a country that is collapsing, that is degenerate, that has lost its sense of moral compass, that's lost its values, family values, religious values, common sense, educational values. We lost everything. And if you can't see that because you've sequestered yourself in your own comfort zone, then get out of your comfort zone and see the world for what it is. Spend a night driving up and down for 4 hours on a subway. Hang around on a platform. If the city's safe, you should have nothing to worry about. Go for a walk in Central Park tonight with your loved ones and put some money in your pocket. Go anywhere in Central Park. After all, the most expensive real estate in New York is surrounding Central Park West, and Central Park South, and Fifth Avenue, and the rejuvenation of Harlem on 110th Street. Shouldn't have any problems. Yeah. Boy, do we live with the illusions. So, anyhow, just understand your legislator has been captured by so many different people. They should wear tags on their body like a NASCAR, showing who owns them, because you don't. They don't work for you. They work for the special groups. Oh, by the way, do you remember when we were telling you that autism is due to the vaccines? Well, we were right. They were wrong. Here's the latest study. And by the way, this is California. No surprise there. Remember, they got the state to mandate all these toxic vaccines where there's no science supporting the use of them in children? To the contrary, the danger of the Gardasil vaccine. And we were real close to overturning the mandate. And I was invited to come on KPFA to do a debate. And lo and behold, they canceled the program, canceled at the last moment, didn't want me on the air. Maybe, I don't know, maybe if I'd have been in that debate, I could have convinced those in that area why the vaccine mandates were wrong based upon the science and autism records. But it wasn't to be. KPFK, Pacifica, commonly censors, of course, they support censorship. If anyone disagrees with them on a political level, I can prove that for 46 years of being there. But now, here's the latest. This comes from study finds, quote, the CDC autism rates in the United States are skyrocketing, especially in California. Quote, autism rates are rising and changing quickly in the United States. A new report from the CDC reveals researchers from the University of California, San Diego provide a closer look into what that means and how California in particular is seeing record numbers. The latest analysis shows 1 in 36, I repeat, 1 in 36 American 8-year-olds have been diagnosed with autism. This is notably higher than the report of 1 in 44 in just 2 years ago. What's changed? Vaccines in children. But it seems like California in general, and the capital and the body politic in particular, don't care about science, real science. Everything is corrupt in California. God, what a disaster. The poor people of California have to tolerate this. No, they don't. Move to a state where that's not going to happen. Anyhow, I'm interested in you knowing the truth, because if you have a kid, do your research before you allow the child to have any medical treatments of any kind. Ed from Los Angeles, your turn, Ed.
Thanks, Gary, for taking my call. I've been to two pro-peace rallies in the past month out here, and we got very few protesters, 100 the first time and 120 the second time. And I really can't figure it out. I don't understand why so few people don't take an interest that this crazy war that we're in, which is basically a proxy war to boost our defense contractors' profits. I mean, when Secretary of State Anthony Blinken came on the air and said, this is a wonderful opportunity, who was he speaking about? I mean, he was talking about the defense contractors, while the rest of us, people are sleeping under bridges. There's a huge housing crisis here in Los Angeles, and probably across the country, people are food insecure. I'm on food stamps myself. And I just can't figure out why so many people are not out there protesting. And I figured it out. Since the Vietnam War, when they got rid of the draft, I think that's when people stopped caring. Because when the draft was going on during the Vietnam War, it was on everybody's kitchen table. And people were concerned about going to war. My uncle was one of them. He had hair down to his shoulders. He was protesting. And now you don't have that. So people just don't, I just don't understand it, but people just don't care. And I'd like to get your opinions about it and what you think.
I'm going to share my opinions later, not today, because I'm going to do an in-depth discussion on this. I believe I have some positive solutions, very positive solutions, of where we're going as a country, as a world. In fact, this coming Tuesday night on the Progressive Commentary Hour, tomorrow night, from Greece, I'll be interviewing Alex Christoforo. He is one of the world's leading authorities on what's happening around the world. He created the Duran. He and his partner, Alexander Mercouris. And so we're going to talk about where the world is going, what's really happening in Ukraine, a proxy war, and why people like Mark Levine and Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and so many people, right and left, but left as well, want us to be into a hot war. And these people will be sharing insights of what will happen. We would lose immediately. I mean, within a day, we would lose the war without a shot being fired.
True.
Look at it this way. Were we able to defend the Afghan country and its people against the Taliban, who had no airplanes, no satellites, no submarines, and total corruption at every level? In 20, 22 years, we weren't able to do anything, were we? Except cause a lot of people, innocents, civilians, children, to die. Remember all the dead children from Barack Obama? Have you ever heard him criticize anyone in his party or the Democratic Party? No, you won't. So if you can't acknowledge what is wrong because someone that you support is the policymaker, then imagine what we've been dealing with. We haven't been dealing with race. That's not the issue. We're not a systemic racist country. We have racism. We have some stupid people. We're dealing with class war. And class war will always, always, in every circumstance, control everyone and everything. They've never lost. And I'll go into get depth in my commentary, but I'm going to take on a historical journey like I like to do in a lot of my commentaries about what happened to the Rothschild family. They supported both sides in wars, so no matter who won, they won. You have to understand class. You have to understand it's not about race. It's not about education. It's not about culture. It's not about ethnicity. That is absolutely irrelevant to people in power. It's about control. And COVID was the first worldwide opportunity to see how much control they could exercise and what the consequences would be. It's backfiring them on now. And the World Economic Forum is losing a lot of its power. And you got Macron. Macron came from where? The banking community. And where did General Milley come from? Where did the Secretary of Defense come from? Raytheon, CEO of the head of Raytheon, just like Dick Cheney came from Halliburton. So unless you're willing to look at who controls the situation and the policy, you're not going to understand the solutions. You'll be looking at the other, and that's what they want. They want us to pit one another against each other. Don't be stupid. And tomorrow I'm going to have the lawyer on and tell you how New York State is about to become the most draconian and dangerous place in America, not because of its rapists, not because of its, you know, homicidal maniacs and sucker punchers, gang rapers. That's not what's going to destroy New York. But this will, when they take away your rights, you're in a confinement area and you can't get out. That's in the law. That's in the legislation. And this expert I have coming on, the lawyer who won, and then it was appealed, this is how dangerous the body politic is. And does the governor have the Senate and have the House behind him? Yes. So it's going to happen. So I'll give you my insights as to why we're not protesting anything. In fact, Ed, when was the last time you saw a protest of the people of Los Angeles? Not the rich and powerful. They have armed guards. And even now that they're beginning to become worried that more than ever they're getting handguns, thousands and thousands of permits, mainly from those people because, gee whiz, one of them was killed in a robbery just a year and a half ago. And now suddenly it's their problem. And then they'll watch Lamborghini and the other expensive cars being driven from nightclubs and restaurants, and now the thieves follow them. And when they open their gates and go in, they come right back in behind them. And now those people are at risk. But have you seen any protest about how to deal properly, humanely, with the poor and the displaced and those with mental illness or addictions or those who are not mentally ill or non-addicted? They simply have no more money, can't find a job, and sometimes working two jobs and still have to live as a homeless person in a shelter or a hotel for a night or their car or van. Have you seen a single demonstration?
I have not.
And you won't because of the mindset in California. Have you seen one in Oregon, in Portland, in Washington State? You have not, and you won't. Have you seen any in New York? No, and you won't. How about in New Jersey, equally as corrupt and fetid as New York? No, you won't. And how about in Vermont, with the good people of Ben and Jerry's, right? No, it's another cesspool. In Virginia, in Chicago, and Illinois? No, and you won't. But I have a solution. I'm going to hold that till later in the week when I do a commentary in depth. But I thank you very much for your call in, Ed. Thank you, and keep listening. Kim from Queens, your turn.
Hi, Gary. I have a question about water filtration. I know that you have talked about it many times, and I think you've sold water filters also at your company, which you can talk about if you want. But with the advent of East Palestine and the talk about dioxin, I was concerned if my filters, you know, would filter that, and I contacted the company, and they said no. My filters are charcoal. From the research I've done, I understand that it has to be activated charcoal in order to filter dioxin, and I was wondering...
That's not the problem. Kim, those charcoal filters are, on a scale of 1 to 10, in my opinion, twos. No, and I'm not selling any filters. But the science shows that you need at least a 5 different filtration methods in order to get the water at zero pollutants, meaning no bacteria, and you need, in effect, reverse osmosis, because that's your best filtration system. And it's not all that expensive, but that's what I would use. Yeah, I bought a filtration system for myself down here, and I also installed another one in the barn for the animals, even the animals, because what is the biggest single element in our body? It's water. And we should have about 72% water, but we don't. Most people are dehydrated. And the liquid goes in their body, or coffee, and therefore you get the caffeine that is bad, and you also get acidic reactions, which is bad. What you need is you need to get yourself a multi-phase filter that traps everything. And then ask for them to send you this independent laboratory statistics of how much of each of the chemicals, how much arsenic, how much lead, how much fluoride, how much of everything they're taking out. And That's what you base your decision upon purchasing. Now, as far as the people in Palestine, Ohio, the contamination, at least from what I've been able to read, which is not complete, but the contamination is so severe that the government, the federal government and the state government, should condemn the entire town, close it down. It's another love canal. The water goes, the pollutants go into the subsoil, and therefore they can stay there. They'll go into small pockets, small aquifers. It will kill everything, just like DDT. To this day, we still have measurable amounts of DDT. That's 51 years ago. I was a part of that whole movement. In fact, my radio show was the only radio program in the United States that regularly did programs on DDT. We're a small number of people. I'd do a demonstration, and we might have five people show up, and nobody seemed to care. Because remember, if you were a kid at that time, they would come down the streets and spray DDT all over the place. And we tolerated that. We shouldn't have. We were lied to. We're still lied to. The government should provide equal or better housing in safe environments in Ohio. If you have a farm, then the government can get you a farm. So therefore, it does not cost the person who's the victim. You don't want to ask the victim to pay for any of this because they're not responsible. The company that did this will be in litigation for years, possibly 10 years. They can drag this on indefinitely. But if the government wants you to be helped immediately, they would move everyone to quality, similar parity housing. And if you lost your income, pay your full income for the last 2 years. Whatever you made on your income tax, that's what they have to give you. So until you can relocate and reestablish, that is the humane, that is the spiritual, and that is the most ethical thing you can have. Will it be done? Of course it won't be done because it's all politics all the time, 100%. They'll do gestures, they'll do platitudes, but until they do that and condemn it, just like they did it finally, long after they should have, to Love Canal, as one example, they allowed thousands of people to live in a completely toxic environment before it was finally condemned. I helped lead that movement as well. It took us 15 years. So that's what we should do. I appreciate your call, Kim. One last call. Let's go over and say hello to, and then we got to leave BAI in 2 minutes. Let's go over and say hello. By the way, I won't be on BAI tomorrow, but I'll still be doing my PRN show here. Ronald from Long Island. Hi, Ronald, your turn.
Yes, good afternoon. Ed from Los Angeles pretty much made the point that I was going to make, that it's because we don't have a draft at the present time and haven't for a long time, that a lot of people are not protesting the war.
I agree, but a person, if we're not protesting the war that we're supporting, and by the way, I had a long conversation today with someone who is an authority in the field, and I wanted to invite on the air, and I wanted to get a pre-interview. And I asked him, what is the truth of Ukraine today? And he said it's a bloodbath. It's upwards of 15 to 1, meaning for every Russian that's killed, 15 Ukrainians are killed. I was referred to dozens of videos up on the internet that show three, and it's generally three, Ukrainian soldiers in their fatigues, going into a theater, a restaurant, on the street, and kidnapping young kids, older men, putting them in vans, taking them, putting on a uniform, and 3 days later, these guys are fodder in the battle. Where Russia has been training over hundreds of thousands of troops for the last 9 months, Russia is building three tanks for every one that the United States and Europe can supply to Ukraine. They have a huge air force they haven't used. And what is the one weapon that has not been used yet by Russia or China anywhere, hasn't been used? Cybersecurity. Do you think that China, with tens of thousands of scientists working on cybersecurity, could not shut down the United States, all of our airports, our nuclear power plants, virtually all of our communication systems in 1 minute? They could bypass and destroy every firewall we have. And that is what the world is not aware of. And yet we have all these people harking over on Fox, but also the Democrats are right with him. Fund the war. Yes, you know, what Russia did, they have to be paid back. Vladimir Putin has an 82% approval rating. Every time he was given a sanction, he simply created the industry to which he had imported a product, and now they manufacture it. They're thriving. Their economy is thriving. China's economy is thriving. China can build a building, a 40-story skyscraper, perfect from breaking dirt to finished product in 11 to 14 days. It takes us 4 years. So you want to take on these countries, and that's what they're harping on now. You want to get boots on the ground, and like John Bolton and others want to do? Well, just imagine, without firing a shot, if you could close down a country and no one's paying attention to the obvious. We've got some really misinformed or intentionally maladaptive individuals in power who should know this. I'm sure there are a lot of people who do know this, and they're way ahead of us in that respect. I appreciate your call, Ronald and Kim and Ed, and I didn't have time to do my other things today, but it's good that you had a chance to call in and share your points of view. That is certainly appreciated. Now, on tomorrow's program, I'm going to be sharing a commentary before a very august group of jurists. These are world-class international war crime scholars. And one of these individuals is going to speak out about what really happened in Rwanda and who actually caused this and what proof he has and how criminal and wrong the international criminal court system is. You're going to get an expose that you've never heard before. This is an exclusive that we'll be having tomorrow. So that's tomorrow. That's just one of the things tomorrow. Also tomorrow, a U.S. general had something to say. In fact, Dylan or Rodney, please play clip number one, U.S. general. By the way, he was NATO, head of NATO also. So what he said is absolutely accurate. I just want you to hear how you've been played and lied to and how the mainstream media knew this, was aware of it, and said nothing about it. The secret plan to invade seven Muslim countries, and every one of those Muslim countries was invaded, and they tried to destroy them. They destroyed two. They didn't fully destroy the others. Let's play the clip.
10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld, and one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, no. He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we got a good military and we can take down governments." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, "I just got this down from upstairs," meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran." I said, "Is it classified?" He said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Well, don't show it to me."
So they knew. It was not about any of these countries representing a threat. It was about we representing the ultimate threat because of our hegemonic practices and how much money, trillions of dollars over those years, the military-industrial complex would make and the people they would hire to front their war machine in the different, more august think tanks, the generals, the philosophers, the ethicists. They would put them all on payroll, thousands of people on their payrolls collectively. So anytime you heard someone lecturing at a college, anyone you heard someone on MSNBC and CBS and Face the Nation, PBS, it's one of their people. And yet all this, the American public felt, we've got to do something. There are threats. Yeah. No, none of more threats. Just keep that in mind the next time anyone goes on any program and tells you, be scared, be very scared. Have you? Or who you're there as a propagandist to tell tell us we should be afraid of. That's it for today. Have a nice day, everyone.